I'd like to welcome you all to the House Special Committee on Energy. It's 5:18 p.m. on Tuesday, April 18th. Thank you for coming to our different time. And based on attendance, maybe this should be our new time. No. Anyhow, members present are Representative Klayman, Representative Johnson, Representative Johnston, Representative Westlake, Representative Rauscher, Vice Chair Sponholz, and myself, Chair Wohl. Today we'll be hearing House Bill 206, titled Exemption Contractors, Electrical Administrators, as our only item of business. We are going to have an overview of the bill today. There were some amendments put forth, but we're not going to try to adopt those today. We're going to hear from the bill sponsor, have an overview of the bill, hear from some invited testimony, and then set it aside. The bill sponsor is still crafting some more amendments and changes to the bill. But that being said, let's bring Representative Tallarico and his staff to the table and introduce the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Dave Tallarico, the representative for House District 6, so I thank you for having this on the agenda today, and I'd like to thank the other committee members for being here. Mr. Chairman, I'll just give you a description of what we currently have and then where we really want to head with House Bill 206. One of the things, Mr. Chairman, and it's kind of nice because a few of the members here also serve on another committee with me, which is the Education Committee. We've certainly had some pretty large and detailed discussions about broadband and our ability or our current inability to actually get broadband distributed throughout the states to all of the students. Of course, we'd like to have all of the students to have great broadband. So we've really found out about tremendous potential that some new satellite internet technology may be able to provide our rural schools and villages. And in December of 2016, a new satellite was launched, Gen 5, and launched over Texas. And two of the spot beams on Gen 5 are pointed towards Alaska. So new satellite and internet packages appears that at some point in time, we may very well may be able to get satellite internet in our remote locations at about 25 megabytes per second. And right now, in some areas, we're at 5 and 6 in some of our rural areas, and we've all heard about the problems they have out there. So if that was available to schools or at least available to students out there, we thought that would be a great thing. So what we were trying to do is make sure that we didn't have a lot of restrictions on the satellite installers, in particularly if something crossed over where it looked like maybe it covered these people that would do the installations or people that could maintain them, in particularly in our rural communities, to see if there would be issues with them getting hooked up or them being able to maintain those. So there's two regulations that make installing the internet satellites reasonably cost prohibitive, especially in the rural areas. So 206 originally seeks to exempt the satellite internet installers who perform that work from needing to pay for and obtain the handyman license. And the current installers that we have, they have a requirement to be trained and certified by FCC regulations before they ever do an installation or actually make adjustments to the satellites. It's my understanding now that as technology is advanced, if you don't do these things right, you can actually, they tell me that you can mess up the satellite. So we believe that since those installers would only be exempted, that we're really trying to focus on just working on that particular thing is the delivery of broadband out into rural areas, better broadband. So 206 also exempts satellite installers from paying and having an electrical administrator oversee their installs. And these are all low voltage projects. So they don't involve any household current or high voltage or anything like that. The only thing they actually involve is the plugging in of an appliance into a wall outlet, this isn't electrical work per se as a certified electrician would be doing for sure. I don't think it's really related, at least my opinion, it's not related to what electrical administrators do. So we looked into that, and of course there are obviously big concerns that people have big concerns about, well, are we going outside of the realm and everything? So we are working with, and I very much appreciate both the Department of Labor and the Department of Commerce. We just recently finished a large discussion about what can we really do here, because they have some concerns of their own. If we don't word this correctly, we'll be exempting people from doing things that they shouldn't be doing, or, you know, people climbing on poles and getting close to high power wires, or, you know, doing the kind of stuff that really these installers, we wouldn't want them involved in. And then there was also the question of the handyman license provides for coverage for liability. They have a low amount of bonding that they get, and that way if they, you know, they've and handymen do all kinds of things, but if they drilled a hole in your house and they hit a water pipe or they hit an electric line or did some damage or something, that there would be a way to cover that. So we're actually working on language with those departments. I'm sorry that we didn't get to it sooner, but actually they have some great suggestions that we can put in there, which will narrow the focus down and I think make people feel much more comfortable with what we would put forward. But I still have this deep down desire to make sure. In Alaska, I know all of you are aware, sometimes we're behind the curve when technology hits and we try to catch up. Well, as we advance to satellite technology, I think it would be great if we were at least close to the curve or maybe in front of it just a little bit so that we could stay there. So my intent here is really about education and the students and their ability stay connected. That's why I think this is important that we get this, that we keep working on it. And like I say, Mr. Chair, I apologize that we weren't further along with our thing, but I do appreciate the idea that you get it on the agenda. We have a hearing, and those people that have issues, you know, I want to hear what their issues are too, because I'm trying to get something fixed here so that it works for everybody. Particularly though, I'll tell everybody my priority one, our students first. And we'll make it work for everybody else, but the priority would really be that distance delivery education that we've been talking about, that we think I think we would probably all think that we desperately need that out there. The reason the issue came up is because in education we talk quite a bit about equalizing our education and giving the same opportunities people in remote areas that they have in some of the urban centers. And what we have found out too is that the urban centers, at least my take on it, is that they would be more than happy to do distance delivery education if the technology was in place, and they're happy to do that. So hopefully we'll be able to work and move forward with this and get a better version and something that people are more comfortable with, so that we can actually get it to the point where as this technology continues to improve, that we're right there, right on the face of it, and not chasing it and not behind it all the time.
Thank you, Representative Tallarico. And I don't know to what degree you want to go over the details of the bill, seeing as you said it is a bit of a work in progress, so I don't want to hammer on a bunch of details that maybe are not going to be in the final product, but if you want to give a slight overview of sort of what the bill does from a higher altitude, that would be appreciated, I think, for members of the committee.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I will let my staffer, Elijah Verhagen, do that for you. Thank you.
Thanks.
For the record, my name is Elijah Verhagen, staff to Representative Tallarico. Members of the committee, if you turn to page 2, line 11, this bill does two things. It basically has two exemptions in it. One on page 2 and one on page 3, 4. So line 11, starting, you'll see all that re-added exemption that used to be in there all the way until 2014. And we changed the wording on a little bit. We put in there work on a low voltage project. So before, this was an exemption of under $10,000 for all work, all construction work. And again, as Representative Tallarico had mentioned, the reason why we even crafted this bill is for the tremendous opportunity we have to get broadband out to these rural areas and the schools, etc. So that was our intent, which is all low voltage. It's at around 19 volts for these cables. And so we didn't want to open up a whole can of worms by re-adding this exemption for all work under $10,000, all construction work or handyman work, etc. So we specifically put in the language low voltage projects under one or more contracts where the aggregate price or the total price is $10,000 or less. Again, we are working on an amendment to shrink that 10,000 limit down to a lower number. We're roughly $2,000 or around there. That way, the consumers are protected. They won't, if something goes wrong, which hopefully, of course, isn't going to happen, but if it were to go wrong, it would be on a very small scale, under $2,000. And so, again, we'll be bringing that next time, that finalized amendment. However, a lot of these satellite installs, the majority of them are only around $500. And out in the rural Alaska, where, again, we're trying to reach with this internet capability, the communities are very small, to where if a service provider does that, they want to use local hire, and so they would train local individuals in these communities, get them up to the FCC regulations that they have to be up to and be certified before they can even mess with a satellite installation, because again, they don't want to mess up the entire satellite. So they are trained individuals. However, if that trained individual were then to do a lousy job on one individual's in the community's customer's project, those of you who are familiar with the bush, the word of mouth is everything in the bush, and they would quickly be, if not run out of town, boycotted, and they would get no more jobs. And so it would be in the best interest of that local installer to do, you know, absolute their best work, sticking to the FCC regulations that they were trained on to make sure they satisfy their neighbors and with their job installations. And so that is the intent and what we imagine will happen under $2,000 with these installs out in the bush. The next exemption, and the only other exemption on page 4, starting on line 12, the installation, maintenance, and repair of low-voltage telecommunication, broadband transmission, and video services. This is the 12th exemption, and you see above that is a list of exemptions from requiring the electrical administrator's oversight of a project. And so we, if you flip the page on line 3, page 3, line 30, exemption 7, the installation, maintenance, and repair of fire alarm, intrusion alarm, or other low-voltage signaling systems at 48 volts, that's exempted, and we feel that this is very similar to that exemption. This is low voltage, and it's defined by the NEC code, but it's 56 volts or less. And so that a normal house outlet is 110 volts, so it's dramatically less than that. It's not dangerous. That would not require these installs. They first go into the house, they plug in into the receptacle that they will eventually be plugging in the transmitter into in a normal 110 outlet. If the outlet is wired wrong, they would have to cease their project, and first the customer would have to get a licensed electrician to go in and fix that outlet, or they would have to fix it themselves. And so the oversight of an electrical administrator is obsolete in these installers' minds and in our mind, as far as they're dealing with low voltage, non-dangerous 19 volt wire cables, and so that's what exemption 12 does. And again, we're working on finalizing that to where we don't have any loopholes or unintended consequences, opening this up to other areas that we're not meaning to affect. And then with that, we have a lot of people online as well, I believe, and they want to talk about this bill.
Thank you. Just to clarify, so basically what you're talking about is satellite, only satellite systems. I mean, it says low voltage, but the intent that you're trying to carry out is simply for broadband satellite receivers. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Okay. Chair.
And I don't know if that language could be put in here, and I know there's some people that were talking about other types of low-voltage systems, like fire alarms or nurse call systems or something like that. And also, this is for residential or small commercial, correct?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this is Dave Tallarico. Yeah, we're going to work on that language
okay.
so that we can bring that to you so that we have that very clearly defined on where the system would be.
Okay. I think we have some questions. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Their only concern was hazardous or classified sites that they would maybe be exempted.
Through the chair, the concerns that we've mostly heard are not necessarily dealing with satellite broadband and internet, which is again the intent of the bill. Most of the primary concerns have been dealing with messing with the power grid, and so that's not again our intent at all. And if there are unintended consequences opened up in this bill because of that, which we've heard that there are, that is what our amendment will clarify. And it may include the word wireless in there because, again, all this broadband transmission satellite is wireless, therefore not plugging into the main power grid, which could be much more high voltage and dangerous. And so that's what we're trying to avoid, and that what the amendment will reflect, that we're not trying to open this up to other areas. It's primarily for wireless broadband internet.
Representative Klayman.
What do the receivers look like today? I mean, are there receivers out there today that would receive? You talked about a satellite system that just got put up recently that would work if we had the receivers. Are these big, small, medium-sized receivers? And how, kind of related to that, when I see a $10,000 limit on constructing anything, my immediate reaction is, like if you're if you have a fender bender, you're lucky to get out for $2,500 for a fender bender, and the notion that you could get somebody in rural or urban Alaska to install anything of any significance for less than $10,000 seems a little bit optimistic, I guess is the best way to put it.
And thank you. Through the chair, Representative Klayman, I was absolutely, I'm kind of like you, I'm used to in the old days, the 12-foot satellite dish, some of them that had to be bolted together and everything. I think what they're using now, and the installers have talked to me, they have sometimes they use something as big as a 48-inch, but I think typically they use about a 30-inch dish now. And I had a satellite system at one time years ago that had this receiver that was more like a VCR player and is a big, and actually the appliance is pretty small, gets plugged into the house, the dish. I think most of the dishes they use are about a 30-inch dish. They don't have, my old receiver was mounted on a piece of well pipe that was 12 feet long, buried in the ground, concreted in, all of that. Sounds like I'm in the old mode. I actually have one at home now that's certainly not that large, but I use a 4-foot dish, and my old 12-foot dish is still out there on the pole. Yeah, it seems like the technology has changed the actual. So they're actually, in most places, they're able to transport these fairly easily. But I would agree with what you said. Sometimes that doesn't seem like much money to get an install. But they tell me that actually they're saying a lot of the installs are about $500.
If I may, I think sometimes that's because a lot of the gear is subsidized because they know you're going to have a service that you pay every month, and it's kind of like buying a printer for $40, but the ink is $50. So, anyhow, Representative Sponholz.
Thank you. Through the chair, what does it cost to get a handyman license? What's the burden?
Through the chair, Representative Sponholz, we've been told it's a couple hundred dollars, and then they have to get Actually, the figure we were told today is in a two-year period, someone would have to pay $400 for a handyman license, on top of getting a business license, which is $50 a year. So we're talking about $500, and then they have to, and that's getting them bonding insurance for up to $5,000. Mm-hmm. And so, again, we're working with that, but we are probably going to maybe shrink that $10,000 limit down a little bit. But at the same time, if it's about $500 and out in the bush, again, these people will have to be certified by FCC, these installers, and they get a number, certification number, et cetera, before they're ever even allowed to mess with the satellites. And so they'll be trained by the HughesNet or Microcom or these DirecTV, et cetera. And one more hurdle of saying to them that they need to pay an additional $500 to get a handyman license, which entails all sorts of doors and windows and all these other things that are not really related to satellite installations whatsoever. That's why we have this exemption in there for low voltage projects.
Okay. So do you think that there's going to be enough work doing this kind of thing that people would do just exclusively this and not become just be handy people? I don't like to use that gender language, so handy people out in rural communities.
Through the chair, this is Dave Tallarico again. The rural economy is so much different than what I'm accustomed to. I think this is an additional thing that someone would do out there, but so many of the people, in particular the people I represent, very hardy people mm-hmm. that live very subsistence lifestyles. Mm-hmm. I think this is additional on to what they would do. I really don't see. They could get busy in some of the larger communities, I think, probably. But if this really catches on and a lot of the installs are in, basically it's just maintenance of the systems and there might not be a lot of that. Mm-hmm. So I would think that they would still maintain a fair portion of their subsistence lifestyles. It's absolutely, to me, it's very fascinating, and I very much admire them, in particularly, like I say, in some of the communities that I represent, because they manage to maintain on those subsistence lifestyles mm-hmm. where a guy like me, it would take years and years and years for them to train me how to do that, to be honest with you. So I think this is more of a kind of a part-time thing. It's more of a providing a service once it's out there.
Okay.
So
follow-up? Sorry, I've got a whole sort of line of thinking. You know, I'm always interested in sort of what the problem is that we're trying to resolve, and then, you know, is the remedy specific enough to get right to that? And it sounds like you're going to try to work on an amendment that'll sort of narrow the focus a little bit more clearly so that you might be actually just exempting the satellite installers as opposed to having this broader exemption. Is that the case?
Through the chair, what I think a lot of folks looked at it and thought, well, you know what, we're going to have linemen out there crawling up on poles that aren't license bonded or don't know what they're doing. That's not the intention here at all. This is really more like working on standalone systems that have the very low voltage, and that issue was brought up to us, though. Although where a lot of these installs would go, there's not a lot of poles in some places, mm-hmm. you know, for people to climb up and down on. But we're talking about these separate systems and standalone to bring this 19-volt wire in and everything and not be a part of an electrical grid or anything. So, yeah, we're going to work on it a little bit to bring that focus in there and bring it back down. And it's funny how we hear things differently, because I had thought that the handyman license was about $235 for every 2 years. Elijah heard it differently than I did. So there's probably somebody that can answer that for us that knows more about it.
We have people from the Department of Labor Department of Commerce will be up here to speak to that. So, any other questions?
All right, if there's no other questions, I have.
Go ahead, Representative Spunholz.
All right. So the other question I had was, you know, when you did your introduction around the issue, I was there in that presentation in the Education Committee, as was, you know, Representative Johnson, hearing about, you know, the opportunities for broadband, which I think is incredibly important to leveling the playing field in rural Alaska. So I appreciate you bringing this forward as a strategy. am not clear. Are people that meet this that meet the sort of criteria that you're working on, sort of narrowing down to these sort of satellite installers, are they going to actually be able to help schools get broadband access as well?
Through the chair, I think it probably, and as we narrow this down, a lot of it will depend on the actual system that they choose to install. Talking to some of the people that deal with some of this, actually, if we substantially drop down that dollar amount threshold, I recently talked to an installer and said, well, you know, I got one antenna. I mean, it's a $2,000 antenna. So there are projects that, if they get to a particular size, they'll fall outside of this realm. But typically, of course, say it's a large, they want to do something large at the school, that's probably going to be done via contract anyway, you know, and it would take, it'll take more than one person even to just handle the equipment to put in and everything. So I think there's somewhat of a limit here. A lot of this would be more like home installation or small business installation or something like that, a little bit more of a personalized thing. One of the issues, too, that we had thought about when we talked about the education is every one of the students that I have in my district don't all necessarily attend a public school. Mm-hmm. You know, there's quite a few that are out there. They're in locations where that's not really available to them. Mm-hmm. So what I'm hoping is at some point in time, and I don't know when that point would be, but they would be able to, you know, stay connected and have that interaction with the rest of the state as far as their education goes.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
For the record, Elijah Verhagen, staff to Representative Tallarico. Through the chair, Representative Sponholz, to add on to what my boss just said, we have talked with some of the providers, including HughesNet, and they have told us that they will develop what they're calling an education or a school package for satellite to get the rural schools a special deal on this internet satellites. So they might be able to speak to that more. Several of them are online. Will Johnson, when we get to them, and also one in the room, Brian Ashton.
Okay, so let's, with that being said, we have Department of Labor, Department of Commerce, they can come up, and then we have some people online. I don't have anything on my displayer, but I'm sure they're, oh, you got it. I got that.
There's a secret button.
We have Deborah Kelly and Sarah Chambers, if you guys could put yourselves on the record and...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Sarah Chambers. I'm the Deputy Director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing.
Thank you, Chair. This is Deborah Kelly, Director of Labor Standards and Safety Division of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development.
So appreciate the opportunity to just say a few words. I know that, as the sponsor mentioned, we've been talking about some language and so we don't want to take up too much of the committee's time knowing you're not looking at a finished product, but did want to just state that we're looking forward to continuing to work with the sponsor and the committee to move the bill toward the sponsor's intent. It's interesting, when we have been speaking about this topic, my first job with the state of Alaska was as the state's educational technologist. So I definitely understand the motivation and the need that Representative Tallarico spoke about. The piece of this bill falls within both statutes are within the Department of Commerce, but we work closely with the Department of Labor who have the expertise in electrical and mechanical areas that we don't. And they also work on enforcement with us, so we have a great long-standing partnership between our agencies. I wanted to speak just a moment about the Section 1, and Deborah can speak about Section 2. Section 1 is the construction contractor exemption, which would exempt, as the sectional analysis said, would exempt the stated work from having any construction contractor license. And our agency just has some concerns from the consumer protection standpoint of exemption from licensure. For general contractors and specialty contractors and handymen, There are no rigorous education requirements. The focus is on having a registration of that license type and making sure that the person is properly bonded and insured if they have employees. So the rigors are not large. I know that's certainly a matter of scale and context, but to pay the fee for a general contractor or a handyman is $235 every 2 years, and the bonding for a handyman is $5,000, which is 2 to 4%. The fee for that is 2 to 4%, and the general contractor bond is, I believe that's now $20,000. So it's a couple hundred dollars a year to be a handyman when you when you're all in, and that any handyman installer would need who does any other handyman work, any work under $10,000, regardless of what it is, if it's fixing, repairing, affecting the structure of a home, then it would need or another structure would need a contractor license. So just wanted to make sure that that was clear to speak to Representative Sponholz's question. And again,
Mr. Chambers.
Sure.
So the $10,000 threshold, that's for a handyman license, and above that you need a full general contractor's license, is that right?
Mr. Chair, either
a handyman is a contractor's license.
It is. It's a contractor license for that smaller dollar threshold. Anything above that would need a general or a specialty,
okay,
or a general with a residential endorsement if you wanted to build homes.
And up until 2014, the 10,000 and below was exempt from any licensure. This is a recent addition, correct?
That's correct. The legislature made that change in 2014.
And so in, let's say in rural Alaska, if I was someone that maybe was a carpenter or something like that and did a bunch of work around the villager and did small jobs, and then 2014 rolls along and they say, okay, if you're going to do this kind of work under $10,000, you're going to have to get a license. Are you tracking how many people are getting these licenses? I'm sure you are, right? Yeah.
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. And the specialty contractor license would be, I think there's a misnomer or a misunderstanding, perhaps, which is understandable, that any work under $10,000 was exempt. If it was covered in a license, for example, carpentry work requires a specialty contractor license in the state. So even if someone was doing hanging crown molding in a home, they would need a specialty contractor license under state law.
Okay, thank you. Representative Rusher.
Thank you, through the chair. A specialty is a subcontractor or specialty license. Those also have some other confines about them. I think you have to pick certain ones. You can't just be out there doing everything and anything. And I just thought maybe you would go through that for us.
Absolutely. Through the chair, Representative Rusher. Oh, sorry. Thank you again, Sarah Chambers.
Good.
I appreciate it. Thank you. This is Sarah Chambers from Department of Commerce. The specialty contractor license, exactly, you can pick up to 3 specialties, and we have a long list of specialties that have been developed over the years, and I could read them for you if you'd like, but they're all kinds of things, including signaling system, sign contractor, fencing contractor. These are special jobs that maybe someone would do 2 or 3, hanging drywall, but not contracting to build the home. You can have 3 of those, and then beyond that you need to get a general, and specialty contractors can't bid for their own work. They have to be under a general, and a general will have to bid.
Appreciate you clarifying that. Thank you very much.
So a handyman doesn't have any performance test of knowledge, anything. They basically just sign up, get a bond, they're qualified. If I'm a specialty, you mentioned crown molding. Is that's a test? Is that performance or knowledge based, or is that just
basic fill out an application.
Mr. Chairman, the only areas where one would need to be tested in the construction contractor field is if you're building residences.
Okay.
The electrical and mechanical administrator license types, which are cousins to the construction contractor license type, which Section 2 of the bill speaks to, does require testing and a far more education, experience, journeyman, certificate of fitness. But for a construction contractor, if you want to build a home, that's the only testing. You can build all the buildings you want and not have any performance measures.
Okay, thanks. Representative Rusher.
Thank you. And through the chair again, that build a home, you mean for someone else as a business? Not for yourself or that kind of a thing, or I think it's like one every 2 years or one every year. I don't even know what the deal is there, but what you're talking about is building homes.
I said, don't go there.
What you're talking about is building homes as a business for other people, correct?
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, you have a very strong grasp on our statutes and regulations, and you're exactly right. There are exemptions, quite a few exemptions, and one of those is if you're building your own home.
Okay. Continue, if you have more testimony.
That actually is the extent of the testimony that I wanted to provide on construction contractor license, with the final remark just being that this is, as we've stated, not a performance-based type of license, but it does provide, the bonding does provide an element of protection for consumers to make a claim on that bond and have some recourse through our investigative procedures should something go awry outside the realm of licensure. And that's one of the reasons why we feel contractor licensure is important for satellite installers as it currently stands in the bill.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Kelly.
This is Deborah Kelly, Labor Standards and Safety. Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'll speak to the electrical administrator's requirement. And just before I begin, I would like to just mention that there are some exemptions related to this type of work already. Manufacture, maintenance, and repair of electrical equipment does not require an EA or electrical administrator. And electrical work under $5,000 in small communities of under 500 people or remote communities does not require an EA. So with that, the EA it's a public safety measure. It's there to make sure that somebody is supervising the work that understands the code. It's there because there are real dangers associated with electrical installations, and even those electrical installations that are meant to be low voltage, because those do not exist in a vacuum. And the department has concerns that this bill, as written, will affect a much broader range of work than intended by the bill sponsors, and create a substantial public safety concern, not just an electrical concern, but structural as well. We are working with Representative Taurico to address these public safety concerns to prevent some of the problems that can occur, because you're asking, the way it's written, it's allowing people who work on or around the high voltage power grid to then bring an electrical connection from that grid into a home or business. And that's the broad brush.
A couple things I have to ask. So if it's a population under 500 or remote community and the cost doesn't exceed $5,000, so what the bill sponsor said earlier was, say, under $2,000 and in rural communities only, they would be exempt from the electrical administrator based on the exemptions already, correct?
Mr. Chairman, this is Deborah Kelly, Labor Standards and Safety. I am not sure whether the bill sponsor was talking about making a specific rural exemption for the electrical administrator. That would be better answered by him. But I do know that the $2,000 requirement was related to Section 1 of the bill. Section 2 of the bill does not have an associated dollar amount.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, this is Sarah Chambers. Under Section 2, which would modify AS 08-4190B, Section B is the rural exemption that Ms. Kelly was talking about.
Right.
That would exempt, that gives us specifics that would exempt rural communities from needing that electrical administrator. Right.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any questions? No? Okay. Thank you both.
Thank you.
We have some people that on the line that we'll hear from. We'll start with a name we all know. Tom Brady is calling in from Anchorage from Microcon. I don't think it's the same Tom Brady, but Tom, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much, committee, for allowing me to testify on this House Bill 206. I want to speak specifically to Section 2 of that bill, which deals with the installation of satellite broadband, satellite video, and other broadband services. I want to call your attention to Alaska Statute 08.40.005, which gives the purpose of the electrical safety program in Alaska Statute. And it's supposed to protect the safety of people, property, and state from the danger of improperly installed electrical wiring and equipment, but providing a procedure to assure the public that persons responsible for making electrical installations in the state are qualified, and that secondly, a sufficient number of persons are so qualified. Alaska Statute 08.40.200 further says electrical wiring means and includes wiring, fixtures, conduits, appliances, devices, equipment, overhead or underground wiring systems, or other equipment in connection with the general distribution or utilization of electrical energy. Satellite equipment and cabling is not used for the general distribution and use of electrical energy. So it would seem that the satellite and broadband industry and television industry would not fall under the purpose of this Alaska statute. A little history on how this came about. Approximately 18 months ago, the Department of Labor and Commerce advised us of a potential violation of Alaska contracting law dealing with Alaska Administrative Code 12 AAC 21.260 dealing with communications contractors. Apparently in 2008, the Department of Labor and consult the Department of Commerce redefined the satellite television industry as being part of the audiovisual industry. That's a redefinition that the audiovisual industry did not recognize or understand. What we're trying to clarify here in this particular act is that the satellite television and broadband industry and the wireless broadband industry would not fall under the Alaska Statute 08.40.005 and its subsequent sections. We're just trying to clear that up. Now, the satellite television broadband industry is to some extent self-regulating to the extent that the major service providers have specific training and certification programs for their field and workforce of employees, contractors, and independent retailers. In addition, there's a National Trade Association, the Satellite Broadcasting and Communications Association, which conducts certification programs on behalf of these service providers for residential and commercial installations. This is supplemented by other online and recurring training by DirecTV, Dish Network, Viasat, and Hughes Networks. And we're not trying to avoid regulation, as we already adhere to the contractor licensing rule in the state of Alaska. What we're saying is that any regulatory structure must have a clear public purpose, be appropriate, be enforceable, and be reviewed on a recurring basis, or currency and not be onerous on small business. This specific requirement for electrical administrator in inside and outside communications is onerous on small business and lacks relevancy to the job involved. I'd like to specifically address a comment from the Department of Labor regarding extending the energy grid into the home. We don't do that. We're not allowed to do that. We're not qualified to do that. we work only with the distribution of video and broadband services and the associated equipment provided by the service provider. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Brady. Any questions? I have a quick question. A lot of people are talking about voltage, how many voltage, what the volts is of satellite. Can you answer that and also what the amperage is? Because there's two, you know, volts and amps are combined to add to the power of a system. So can you answer those questions?
The highest voltage currently used in satellite television and satellite broadband is 29 volts at approximately 1.5 amps.
Okay.
And that's DC voltage.
DC voltage. Okay, thank you. So that's 20 what amp was it?
29 volts, approximately 1.5 amps.
Thank you. And thank you for your testimony. We have Joe Ashcraft from Ketchikan up next. Joe, are you there?
Yeah, Joe Ashcraft, Ketchikan. I'm in Yakutat today installing HughesNets, of which we've done about 60 so far, and they are working, as somebody said, they're working very well. One of the misinformations we got, one of the earlier representatives about the students and things like that, unless HughesNet takes the FAP, the Fair Access Policy, the cap limits on these off, it's not going to be viable for a school, because a school, it's worked so fast, and right now we're talking 40 megs down or so. With HughesNet trying to match the broadband definition from the FCC of 25 megs going forward, a school of, say, 10 or 20 kids might use that 550 gigs that are available for the month up within a few days, and then you're fat down to a slow speed, slower than the KU band existing that most of the schools have today, which are unfapped. I got to support the people about the EA. For the most part, it's very low voltage and not much danger. Well, the danger is, where I see is some places where you have lightning around Pelican and stuff, there's no grounds out there, or if they're put in backwards so the water's dripping into them, and lightning and other excess current can build in some of those places. And my feeling is that some of these people that are trained or untrained out there or do their own, somebody needs to oversee them and train them well, because in the past, places like Pelican, or I know Puna, there's a lady that put a bunch of dishes on top of the roofs, and there's holes, and now, you know, 5 or 6 years later, those holes are all leaking into plywood, basically ruining the house. So I don't think we can go by with just no regulation, but I think it stands for, you know, somebody like us that hires subcontractors to monitor what they do, audit the installations, and make sure that that the consumer is not put out money-wise for poor installs. You know, you can say the second guy down the road isn't going to get one from the guy that did a poor install, but the first guy, you know, lost his roof or lost his house, he's still out. The other thing is the dishes, for the most part, the HughesNet dishes that we're putting in are 0.98, about a little bit more than a meter or less than a meter. There will be some 1.2 meters used on the edges of these signals to try to get a signal. And they're a little bit bigger dish, but not so big. The state required me to put in a 2.4 meter dish last year at a construction site and it took a while to get that dish to the construction site at huge expense. A 1.2 meter dish worked in there fine for 3 months until we got the 2.4 in there, and it worked about a percentage point better. So I think the state, just listen to the representatives, I think there could be some education. It sounded like Tom or Will or any of those guys that have been in this for 20 or 25 years like we have could sit down with some of the representatives and you guys could, you know, pick some brains on what's really going on out there, because it just seemed like there was quite a bit of people that, you know, one guy had knowledge about a C-band from years ago, and all of that's valid knowledge, but the technology's moving so fast that, I don't know if pushing this toward, you know, using students as a excuse on this is exactly what we want to do, because they're the ones that probably, and their school buildings should probably be protected more than some of the other things. That being said, I want to mention to those people, the representatives, that they should maybe look at a company called OneWeb, which will be available for students and people all over the world within about 2 or 3 years, and which will dispel any need for any electrical administrator. So I would be available for questions when I'm not out in managing these installs.
Okay.
Over the next 6 months, because there's going to be a lot of them.
Thank you, Joe. Thanks for calling in. And so, just for the record, you're an installer. You're a self-employed installer.
I'm a dealer from Ketchikan.
You're a dealer. Okay.
I do installs, and I've been doing installs for about 30 years.
And is $2,000, would that cover most of your installs?
You know, I don't know. We get, it depends on the dish. If we do one for an iDirect system that's got a 2.4 meter dish, we usually probably do that for around 12. GCI does the same thing for about 25. If we're out there doing a dish network, which we don't get paid for on a lease basis or, a return or reimbursement from dish, is probably $1,500. A HughesNet install, because they have some specials on just on this install, we're charging $600 for the dish plus the install. We get reimbursed from Hughes another $400 or $500 on it, so about $1,000 on that. We used to do Starband installs for about $2,500 at the time. That was about 15 years ago.
Okay.
So I'd say, you know, a minor install on a residential place, you know, $2,000 is a good figure. If you're on the bush somewhere, you're going to send a post out there. The post costs $150, and the concrete for the post costs another $300. You can get to $2,000 pretty quick on the total install,
okay.
Whereas the labor of actually doing it might be a lot less.
Okay, thanks. We're just trying to get a ballpark. Thanks, Joe. I appreciate your testimony. Next, we're going to go to Will Johnson in Fairbanks. Will, are you there?
Hello, this is Will Johnson at Alaska Satellite Internet in Fairbanks, and I got started on the ground floor of HughesNet back 2003-2004 when the Horizons 1 satellite launched, and I was in the bush operating the flight school in Bethel for AVCP, and my goal at the time was to I was on a crusade to see if we could get some native local pilots trained instead of using the folks from Lower 48 who tended to not stay. They built their experience on the backs of Alaskans, scared the passengers, wrecked the airplanes, ruined the propellers, were disrespectful of the local people, things like that. And so the flight school turned out to be enormously successful. Sadly, it's fallen on hard times, although there is a completed beautiful facility out there with airplanes, even a maintenance training facility, all dormant due to lack of funding. But we did get a number of pilots trained.
Can we get to the satellite issue, please?
These pilots online, I discovered that I didn't have any internet, and I desperately needed internet to get all the different testing requirements, the training requirements, the simulators, all of these things, FAA requirements, all these required the internet. And one of the upper-level managers at Hughes said one time in one of our meetings, he said, "I think this internet thing's catching on."
Yeah.
And I thought, well, is that the truth?
Can you speak to the bill at hand? These stories are great. Can you speak to the bill at hand?
I am.
Okay.
What I'm trying to do is take advantage of the local talent out there, and this talent is very smart, very capable, and I could not figure out how we were going to get these things installed and what we would do to overcome the high cost of sending people out in the bush. And so I hit on the idea of using local people, get them trained, which has added enormously to the technical experience of the people out in the bush. And we now partner with over 400 installers in rural areas, and they do a tremendous job of getting these things in. We've installed more satellite internet a few years off and on than anybody in the nation, and have more active customers than anybody in the nation. So this job, this business of using local people has worked beyond my wildest dreams. Now, I can absolutely, positively assure you that the exemptions that the labor folks talk about for electrical administrator are unworkable. Very difficult to tell where an electrical administrator is, and if someone is around, if he's available, I can assure you that you will absolutely kill the deal to require an electrical administrator, and on top of that, you'll kill it with bonding and licensing. If you look at just the application alone, my eyes glazed over when I looked at it, and I can tell you that an Navy guy out in the bush is just going to say, the heck with this, I'm not going to have anything to do with this. And I'm trying to remove obstacles that prevent us from getting local people involved and getting these systems installed. And I can tell you that over the years of getting these things in from the very beginnings, we have not had a problem with ruining houses, ruining roofs, electrocuting people. None of this has happened. And these things have gone all over, all the way from troopers to earthquake monitoring, to the FAA weather cameras, and homeschooling is a big deal. And it always bothered me that the kids had internet at school and they'd come home and no internet to do their homework with. So I feel like that if we continue on the course we're going, I'm going to have to shut down my business, tell all those installers goodbye. There'll be no more work for them because I know exactly what's going to happen. I've spoken to a number of them, and they said universally that they're not going to do the licensing and bonding. It would be expensive. Remember, they only install maybe 3, 4, 5, 10 a year. And then I still want them around to service and also install an additional system or two. So all of this is going to disappear, go away. All of what we've built is going to be gone. And the other model will take over, where we send out installers from the big city at enormous expense. Then they might install a whole bunch of them at once, but then once that installer's gone, then you can't get the extra system installed if somebody wants it later, or if somebody breaks down, nobody's going to come out from the city to service that extra system. I thank you for your time and taking time to listen, and appreciate your patience while I kind of led up to the idea of why I like to use native installers.
Thanks, Will. Thanks for your testimony. I have a couple questions. So you have 400 installers in rural Alaska, which sounds like a lot. So you must have installed many, thousands of systems, I would guess?
That is correct, sir, and I need to mention one other little detail. I only want one business model. I can't have six different business models for each region.
All these installers you've worked with, you're saying that if they had to go get a handyman's license and register with the state and get bonded, that would be a burden, a hurdle that they wouldn't be able to get over.
It'd be a bridge too far, sir. It's just more than the average guy out in the bush. Not only does it economically not make sense for no more than he does and the limited money he's going to receive from doing these, but it's also going to be a nightmare for him to comply with, and it's just not going to happen. And anybody that feels differently, I would suggest that they're not too familiar with the conditions in the villages.
And just one last question. Do you know anyone that has a handyman's license in the bush?
I don't know of a single person that does, and I can tell you that all this does is make everybody lawbreakers.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, thanks for your testimony, Will. We have one last caller from Tenneke Springs, Craig Mapes. Are you there, Craig?
Yes, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, if you could just put your name and affiliation on the record, and we're ready to hear your testimony.
Okay, my name is Rick, and I live in Tenneke Springs, Alaska, and it's a village here about 70 miles from Juneau, so it's actually cosmopolitan compared to some of the villages that Will is referring to. I'd like to thank the committee for the opportunity to testify. What it really is, I think, all about the real issue here more than anything else, is we need local installers. Even in a bedroom community of Juneau, it is so hard to get somebody out here, and when they do come out, they might put in a few satellite dishes and tune up the modem, get you up and running, and then they're gone, and you can't get them back. And it's all about having local installers. In fact, I was looking to get a HughesNet upgrade recently, and it's so difficult to get somebody out here. I had mentioned to the distributor that, you know, if nobody else would do it, I'll become an installer. So immediately I received an email that said you can start the training, and I started the training, and I'm well on my way to becoming an installer. And then about in the middle of this training, I realized that there was this big stumbling block, me even, someone who could probably get an ANSI license much easier than a lot of people out there. I'm a retired school teacher. I taught construction for decades. I've built many houses in Alaska. I'm certainly qualified and able to get a handyman's license, but I don't want to get a handyman license to install my system and a few of my neighbor's systems, nor do I can afford a bond to do this simple task. As far as safety goes, the very first thing that I learned in my national curriculum with HughesNet training was that I take a simple voltage tester that you plug into an outlet, just like you plug in a microwave or a toaster to an AC outlet in the home, and if there's any indication that the power is not okay, the installation stops at that point, and you have to get a licensed person to come in and repair it. Now, the system itself is a voltage system, but essentially it's like plugging in a toaster. You literally mount the dish with very stringent standards, and when you run the wire to the home and you plug in a modem, literally plug in a modem to an AC outlet, has nothing to do with high voltage or electrical wiring. Basically, it's pretty much simple stuff. So once again, I want to reiterate, it's about having local people available to do this. And I know even in my own case, like I said earlier, it would be a burden, an unrealistic burden, to go through the hoops and jump through all of the expense to become a licensed contractor and buy the bond. So I guess what I would say is that if there's any way that we can make these systems installable by local people, it's going to be a tremendous assistance to folks that live out here. What I'm making right now is on a satellite internet connection, off-grid. When my neighbors found out in Tenneke that I was going to become a local installer, many people have approached me, up to about 10 and counting, that want to get the satellite internet, and people that are on the grid in Tenneke Springs. I wanted to get this system because the AT&T system is not working. So people are very, very, very happy that we're going to get a local person here. But as it turns out, we might not be getting a local person here. So, you know, I think it's very important to try to work somehow around some of the regulations that are currently in existence so that people that live out in villages can get communication services. And I'm totally in support of electrical safety. I understand the reason for codes. I'm supportive of that. But I think somehow, some way, if we can make it possible for local installers to put in these satellite systems, it's going to help a lot of people. And I guess I would conclude my testimony by saying I hope we can work this out because it's kind of a big deal. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mertz. I have a couple questions. First of all, so are you're undergoing the training from HughesNet, or you've completed the training from HughesNet?
I have completed the portion online, and I am about to undertake, as a matter of fact, the day after tomorrow, I was going to complete my hands-on training, and then I would become an installer.
And is this something you have to pay for, or do they pay for that?
There's basically no charge for the training. Except in my case, I have to get myself from where I live to the training site at my own expense.
And last question, do you know anyone in Tanaki Springs that has a handyman's license?
You know, I don't know. Honestly, I can't. I think there's at least one person here that's a licensed contractor, but no, I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
Actually, I take that back. So the answer to that question would be no.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mapes. Thanks for your testimony. And I believe there's one more, Brian Ashton, and he's in the room. Hi, Mr. Ashton. You set your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Brian Ashton. I'm from Wrangell, Alaska, and I am a dealer for HughesNet. Along with Will Johnson, I helped introduce HughesNet into Alaska about 10 years ago. And I want to answer a couple questions first. For those of you that were in the Education Committee a week and a half ago, I helped facilitate the Executive Vice President of HughesNet, Mike Cook, to present to that committee to talk about what's coming up with the new HughesNet technologies and update the committee on what is possible. I'm in support of this bill. I'm a very strong advocate of living in rural Alaska my whole life. I was actually raised in Hoonah, lived in Bethel, lived in some of the cities, Anchorage and Fairbanks as well, but Wrangell's home has been for quite some time. It's important for us to have trained people in these rural communities that can basically not only install these systems, but service them when they go down. And having people simply fly in, get paid a premium because of all the bonding certification, everything else, to go in and get these systems installed and not be there when the storm comes up and the dish gets moved a little bit and they need to be sited again. It's just very, very important to have someone locally that can be called down the street to come fix this. And you have to be certified in order to do that. I'd like to answer some. A lot of this stuff was actually covered quite well in the other presentation, so I'll cut this short and maybe answer some of the questions that I've heard you guys bring up during this testimony. When it comes to us not being electrical administrators, this is the plug-in device that you plug into the wall, and it simply tells you with some lights whether or not you have adequate AC power. And if you do not have adequate AC power, you stop the install right away per the National HughesNet training and tell the person to get a hold of a certified electrician to fix your power. Because this technology that's now delivering for the first time in history 25 megs a second broadband to rural Alaska by hanging a dish on the side of your house, the equipment costs $600. This is just a used modem I just pulled off of my shelf. It simply plugs into the wall just like a toaster. There's one hole you have to drill in the wall to run one RG6, which is VHF cable, through the wall to hook from the satellite, which is running up to 21 volts, into this AC appliance here. Very, very simple system. But because HughesNet is dealing with this on a large national scale, they're the largest satellite internet provider in the world. They deal with the FCC on federal regulations on how this stuff is rolled out, and also because if the system isn't installed properly, it could actually stress the satellite. It can't break it, but it can make the satellite work a lot harder. And what's really important for rural Alaska is, until now, we've been operating on a satellite that's 15 years old. It's called the Generation 2 technology. Keep in mind that the internet is only 26 years old. So a 15-year-old satellite that was providing up to 2 megs a second 15 years ago was pretty impressive. This new satellite, they're guaranteeing a minimum of 25 megs a second. I operate the health monitoring satellite dish in Wrangell for the spot beam that now covers southeast Alaska, and I've seen up to 75 megs a second on this. So we're talking about the first time. It is the most powerful satellite internet system in the world, and we actually get to be a part of it. We basically missed out on Generation 2 and Generation 3 and Generation 4 satellites because those were further east where the bigger markets were, so we simply couldn't access them. So what we're trying to do is be proactive and preemptive and basically making sure we have a good program to train rural people to provide service to these, so that, again, not just for installations, but if you have a satellite system go down because of a storm, call Sam down the street, takes 15 minutes to basically realign the dish and you're up and running again, instead of waiting for someone to have to charter in to basically take care of it. I had a person complain on Prince of Wales Island just last week that they got charged $500 for someone to come over from Ketchikan to repoint their dish. Took 15 minutes. And so not only do we need to have it for reliability and quickness of service, but also I think that we need to basically preserve as many opportunities in these rural communities to have these technology jobs available. So it really goes beyond that. It's really exciting that we're getting to participate in this really amazing technology in our communities, in our rural communities, but it also speaks to how we build out our model for economy as well, so we can maximize those rural jobs as much as possible. Mr. Mapes is going to be trained by me in Hoonah the day after tomorrow. Okay. And Mr. Mapes is a retired school teacher, as he said, that really doesn't want to become bonded with all these other things. He understands that he has to be certified by a national certification process by the largest provider in the world, and he will, and he is. But to go through these other things, there's just no benefit to it. When it came to protecting property and stuff, a hole that you can push this through the wall and put some caulking around it to seal it up, in the 10 years that I've been overseeing this, I have not had one complaint by a system that's hurt a house. So is it possible that it can happen? Yes. Is the probability high? It's zero for me right now, and I've been covering southeast Alaska for 10 years. And I just kind of do this on the side because it's a passion for me that we actually have this for Alaska now. One other comment. One of the people that called in said that our current plans don't work for the school systems. I'm in touch with senior executives from not only HughesNet, but the parent company of HughesNet, EchoStar, that actually build the satellites, to see if we can't put together a plan that will work for the rural schools. To be candid about this, the $2.4 billion of the FCC Alaska plan that was appropriated and signed last fall, that the satellite internet companies didn't participate in my opinion, it was a wake-up call for them to get more involved and make sure that they're addressing the plans and what we need in rural Alaska so that they don't miss the boat again. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. And I overlooked someone at the top of the list because my screen was not there, but we have Walter Robinson from Fairbanks. And Walter, sorry it took me so long, but are you there, and can you put your name and affiliation on the record?
Can you hear me, Representative Wolf?
Yes, we can hear you just fine, Walter.
Thank you. My name is Walter Robinson. I live in Nenana, Alaska, and I'm with IBW Local 1547. I'm here to testify against Health Bill 206. I'm a 17-year electrician and have worked around the state both in low-voltage and medium-voltage systems. I'm licensed to the state of Alaska as an electrical journeyman and have passed required tests that pertain to the National Electrical Code. These standards have been set in place because it does not matter the voltage rating of a system, but rather what the system does. I see no reason to lower the standards required by the state to have the work performed by a company that does not hold and electrical administrator's license. This will open the door for other low voltage systems that are life safety to be reformed without an electrical administrator's license. This bill targets projects under $10,000 and rural Alaska projects. This is the last place we need to cut. Be cutting corners in rural Alaska schools. Electrical systems need to be installed in a safe and professional manner. The only way to ensure that this happens is by using qualified people that are licensed and the work is overseen by a person holding an electrical administrative license. We don't need to put Alaskans at risk. If anything, we should be strengthening certification requirements, not doing away with them. My problem is not with the satellite disk install. It is that this bill opens up all low-voltage systems. There needs to be a way to find to narrow down the scope of this bill. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Walter. Thanks for your testimony, and I think your last point is something we've been talking about this meeting of narrowing the scope down. So this bill is a work in progress still, and we will be coming back to it. And I want to thank all the parties that came to speak today about the bill, and the bill sponsor and committee members who are still here. And it is 6:33. And we will adjourn this meeting. Thank you.